Good morning, or good whatever time it might be that you have the opportunity to listen to this today. I understand there was a technical glitch at GCN last night with their servers, so that live streaming of the broadcast is temporarily delayed until such time as the wizards of technology at GCN can fix whatever went bump in the night. These kind of things happen. There is no technology that is wholly reliable, and so we'll mush on. I understand that we are recording and that the archives will still be fully functional at the end of the program today. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose and also condemn the destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, as well as with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. During our second hour, we will strive to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since He is the only reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in the discussion, is 877-376-45. If I seem a little more intense than normal this morning, that maybe an elevated heart rate that is showing up in faster than normal speech, it isn't a function of having too much coffee, but this morning was my normal shift where I do an hour on KGAB, K-G-A-B, in Wyoming, broadcast to the 11 western states. The host of that show, Dave Chaffee, and I have been good friends for a very long time. I've done the show now for 11 years, once a month for an hour. And normally we do very similar things to what we do at the beginning of this program, where we discuss the news and provide people with insights so that they can understand what's happening behind those headlines and how it's going to influence them over the next years. And this morning we did begin with the Benghazi attacks. We talked also about the IRS. There was one insight I shared with the IRS scandal that I have not shared on this program, Benghazi things we've talked about here. But the thing about the IRS is that the scandal is because they targeted tax-exempt conservative political organizations. So I've got a great idea. Since America's corporate tax rate now is the highest in the world at 39%, it was amongst the highest in the world at 35%. But in the midst of a recession and economic downturn, the geniuses running the U.S. government thought that maybe the engine of economic recovery ought to be shut down, and let's increase taxation on corporations. So it was raised to 39% from 35%, making it the highest in the world. Perhaps the real issue is that we give tax-exempt status to political organizations. Why not tax them at the same rate or a higher rate than businesses are taxed? Because is it not the politicians who are squandering the revenue that is being generated by corporations? I mean, isn't it corporations that pay essentially 100% of the bills? Because it's the corporations that create the products that are sold that are then taxed. And it's the corporations that hire the individuals whose income are thereby taxed. And, of course, the corporations themselves are taxed. So rather than giving tax-exempt status to those who are destroying the system, that are the kinks in the mechanism, why don't we tax political organizations 39% and stop taxing, give a tax-exempt status to corporations? Wouldn't that make for a vastly more successful America? Now, the other aspect of the KCAB interview that got my juices flowing this morning is that the last three callers were began by trying to advance the value of Christianity and the New Testament. There are lots of people on KGAB that have listened for years and were just happy as a lark when I was criticizing Islam. But when it became obvious that Christianity was no better, they became extraordinarily upset, tried to get the host of the show thrown off the air, tried to make certain that I no longer had a voice on the show. And I'm fine. I'm not paid for this. Not paid for this even. So I was certainly fine with that, but just had a conniption fit that I was actually saying that Paul was a false prophet. So the first caller wanted to say that experientially, since his next-door neighbors had were a beautiful family and they had wonderful children, and that that he attributed the fact that they had wonderful children and they were a beautiful family to the fact that they tried to keep the Ten Commandments. Now, mind you, there aren't any commandments among the Ten Statements. That they followed the Scriptures, which I said, no, no, they ignore the Scriptures. The Scriptures, the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. If they're Christians, they're ignoring the Scriptures, and they are instead following what Paul wrote, and he was a false prophet. So that the validation for Christianity was that, boy, those are nice kids. And, you know, when you're up against that and you, it's extraordinarily frustrating. And also what I did, of course, was just say that that inconsistent with what the caller had said, that I don't have a dogma, that I simply came to question English translations of the Bible, recognizing that that the mission I was on, which was to expose and condemn Islam, you are drawn into a comparison between the Quran and the Torah because Allah makes that comparison. And when you find that there is no comparison between the two, it becomes very easy to undermine Islam. But then when you find that there's no comparison between Christianity and the Torah, does that not also undermine the religion of Christianity? And I explained to him that process, and that the more deeply one and closely, carefully, one studies the Torah, the realization is that it's wholly incompatible with the Christian religion. And so God either lied in his Torah, or Christianity is a lie. And since Christianity claims that its God inspired the Torah, there's only one option there that's possible, that Christianity is false. And that is how simple it really is. Then we had another fellow call in. His name is Chaplain Ron, and his solution was that Jesus brought in the New Testament. That was the Old Testament. Jesus brought in the New Testament. So we went to Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah 31, and I said, so how is that possible? Because there is no Old Testament or New Testament. The covenant has not been renewed. Oh, yes, it has. Well, here's what God has to say. Why don't you argue with him instead? And we presented the reality that the covenant cannot be have been renewed because God says that its ultimate renewal will be on the basis of the reconciliation between Yehudim and Yisrael, something that has not happened yet. And he says that the only difference between the existing covenant and his reaffirmation of the covenant is that he's going to literally write a copy of his Torah inside of all of us. And since this individual, that Chaplain Ron, had the ability to deny the covenant, deny the Torah, had the ability to say that it's been done away with, it's old, and there's something new, something added, when God said, I'm going to take my existing Torah, I'm going to write it inside of you. Is that not absolute proof? The very fact that you can deny, demean, dismiss the Torah, isn't that absolute proof that it has not been written inside of all of us?
You would think it would be, but I guess if I was believing that all I had to do was believe, well, then it was written inside me because I do believe, you know.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is that with Chaplain Ron, as I contradicted everything that he said and provided him with the evidence, he says, you know, I hate to admit it, but you're right. Maybe that is our problem. Is that we're not listening to what God had to say, and we're trying to impose our own interpretations on things. Maybe what you're saying really is right, and what we need to do is listen. And then the host said, what we're going to do here is we're going to set up a series of programs and allow callers to try to challenge my understanding of the Torah, my understanding of Yahusha, the presentation we've talked about on this program of the covenant and the path to God, and we're going to present it on that those series of programs in addition to demonstrating that Paul was a false prophet. And so we'll see how that plays out. I hope to be able to do that and not have the host of the program be fired because he is a good friend of mine.
I think if they're open-minded, then it should be all right.
They're open. Now, listen, there are many open-minded people in the Mountain States, by the way, and he has a wonderful audience. But I have, how many open-minded people have you known that are religious zealots?
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
But it also comes down to, we've talked about this before. It all comes down to how you talk to them. I mean, if you're really demeaning and you come across as being a real jerk to them when you're trying to explain something to them, people tend to look at that and, they get all queasy and everything like that.
You may hear the difficulty, though, and this is something that came up today, is that when somebody's calling in and they're advancing lies and you stop them and say, wait a minute, before you tell the rest of your story, this guy's saying that Jesus brought in the New Testament. Now, I shut him down. Because I said, and if you're going to advance your side with distortions of the truth, then we have a problem. I can't sit here and listen to you lie to your audience. And so let's explain why Jesus isn't his name. Let's explain who he was. Let's explain the fact that if you're going to cite him, then you need to follow his example, which would make you a Torah observant, which means you can't be a Christian anymore. And let's talk about the renewal of the covenant. Because what you're saying is untrue, and to do that, what you have to do is shut the person down so they don't continue to pile up 100 false statements where it becomes impossible for you in the time that you have to refute all of them. So that's the real challenge, is that if you have control and you say, no, stop there, let's refute these two, and then once you've admitted that you're wrong there, then we'll go to the next point you want to make.
I agree with you on that. It's a lot easier to refute the errors as they come up than it is to try and remember all the errors that they made after they tell them.
Even if you could remember them all, and what I do when I do a radio debate is I'm always taking notes. I write down each thing that they say. But it becomes, the way that the human mind works, it becomes impossible for the audience even to maintain contact with all of those things. And in the time that you have, recognizing that it takes a second to state something that's untrue, it takes minutes to provide evidence and reason to refute a popular lie. It's a very, very challenging undertaking. We'll be back with Shattering Myths in a moment. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We were talking about the discussion that took place during the interview with KGAB for an hour this morning. And during the break, Scott made a comment that I thought was apropos. God created us in his image. So to thank him, we turned around and created him in ours. We created a religious God. And, I mean, the reality is that the real God is really a nice guy. He is the ideal father. He's fun. He's got a great sense of humor. His attitude, his approach, everything about him is just real. It's genuine. It's terrific. It's not over the top. There isn't a hint of hubris or ego. It's just he is perfect. And not perfect in a sense of unapproachable perfect, perfect in an approachable sense. It's just such a sad thing that we took a God who is absolutely ideal, that unlike any God of the pagan religions and, with thunderbolts and with tridents and all of that kind of stuff, and with their petty jealousies, we took the real God, who is absolutely perfectly approachable, genuine and real, fun to be around, entertaining, self-sacrificing. We took the real God, and we did away with him so that we could create a God in our image. And that's the religious God. The Allah of Islam was nothing more than Muhammad's alter ego. The Jesus Christ of Paul's letters is Paul. That's who he is. There is no distinction between Paul and the Jesus Christ of Christianity. They're one and the same. We created a God in our image. That's how we thanked the real God. Truly sad what we have done, how we've exchanged the truth for a lie. Yosha said it in words that still choke me up just to think about them. He says, you know, I came in my Father's name and you did not receive me, but one will come in his own name and you will receive him. Just talking about Paul. Powerful realization. I do want to turn to some news this morning. There's lots of bad things happening around the world. Reuters is reporting that a suicide bomber. Now, do you think the suicide bomber was a Boy Scout? A Girl Scout? Do you think the suicide bomber was a Baptist preacher? How about a suicide bomber as a Buddhist monk? Do you think the suicide bomber might have been a secular humanist? When I say suicide bomber, what is the likelihood that that person is a fundamentalist Muslim, killing themselves and others on behalf of Allah? And suicide bombing, would you say, since World War II anyway, because there were suicide bombers in World War II, they were working on this mix of politics and religion that was Imperial Japan. But that was the early 1940s, and so now, some 70-plus years later, Muslims have an absolute exclusive on suicide bombings, don't they? Anyway, a suicide bombing, that means a fundamentalist Muslim, in a car attacked a convoy of foreign troops in Kabul. Remember how Karzai, a week or so ago, told Afghanis that the Afghani Taliban, actually talking to the Taliban and saying, you know, you ought not continue to attack Afghan targets, you attack our real enemy, and the real enemy was America and the NATO forces, as well as Pakistan's military. And so what have the Taliban now started to do? Well, a suicide bomber attacked a convoy of foreign troops, this would be the NATO troops, mostly Americans, of course, make up the NATO troops, on Thursday, killing at least 15 people, including six Americans, Afghan and foreign officials said. One of the worst attacks in the Afghan capital in months. 40 people were wounded by the blast. Hezb-e-Islami, which would be the Party of Islam, Hezb meaning party, that's like Hezbollah is party of Allah, is the terrorist group, this says insurgent group, which is allied with the Taliban as opposed to being allied with Islam, claimed responsibility for the attack on the two-vehicle convoy. So here's a Party of Islam, and this journalist can't even look up the word Hezb, and it says e-Islami, of Islam. He can't even figure out that maybe that terrorist group, maybe just a chance that the Party of Islam is a group affiliated with Islam. And it's like asking the question, what do all Islamic terrorists have in common? Well, isn't the modifier of terrorist Islam? Still can't figure it out. No, the Hezb-e-Islami has to be allied with the Taliban. No, they're not. Hezb-e-Islami, the Party of Islam, is allied with Islam. The Al-Nusra Front is a derivative of the Awakening Councils, which is, in essence, the Islamic State of Iraq. So the Awakening Council, which is the United States plan to arm Sunni militants so that they can create a relative mad, mutually assured destruction scenario against the Shia army that America built in Iraq, that we armed both sides, and we said, okay, now that both sides are armed, there will be relative peace because it's mutually assured destruction. Now, that doesn't work in Islam. And so the weapons that we provided for the Awakening Council became the Nusra Front. The militants and their arms became the Nusra Front, and the Syrian war went from a peaceful protest to an armed insurrection as a result of what we did in Iraq. And now Americans, according to this president, say that we should arm the rebels. Well, today, in Syria, the Nusra Front, which is the largest of the rebel militant regimes, executed 11 men. This is after they ate the heart of a Syrian soldier yesterday. They executed 11 men they accused of taking part in atrocities by al-Assad's forces. The man whose face was covered by a black bandana shot each man in the back of the head as they kneeled blindfolded in a row of in the eastern province of Deir al-Zor. The quote, the Sharia court, which would be the Islamic court, the most repressive, most repulsive, most hypocritical laws, set of laws ever established. These are laws now that are established solely on the basis of Muhammad's words and deeds. And Muhammad was a kidnapper. He was a slave trader. He was a racist. He was a womanizer. He was a rapist. He was incestuous. He was a pedophile. He was a thief. And he was a ruthless terrorist, a mass murderer. So laws based upon that man's behavior. So the Sharia court for the eastern region has sentenced to death these apostate soldiers. What does apostate mean in Islam? That these Muslims, according to the Sharia court, which was no court at all, they're just citing Muhammad's example, have to be killed because they were no longer viewed as Muslims. That's why Yahweh, when he was speaking of Muslims, said that they'll be wild asses of men, their hand will be raised against their brother, and their brother's hand will be raised against him. And that's what's happening here. The Sunni Muslims don't see the Shias as being true Muslims. They view them as apostates. The Quran in the Ninth Surah orders good Muslims to kill apostate Muslims and to send them to hell so that Allah can personally attend to their torture. So the Sharia court for the eastern region has sentenced to death the apostate soldiers that committed massacres against our brothers and families in Syria. So by the same standard, since most of the massacres in Syria have been perpetrated by the Nusra Front, why shouldn't the same treatment be afforded to them? The Islamist militants with black flags shouted, and of course Reuters, being ever stupid, shouted, God is great. No, they didn't. Every bit of that is inaccurate. You know, if we can't present information in a manner that's accurate, even if people were motivated to exercise good judgment, garbage in, garbage out. They were shouting, Allah is greater. They were shouting, Allah is greatest. And the moment you realize that it's Allah and is greater and greatest, then it begs the question, greater than whom? If you say God is great, that makes it sound like, oh, these are just like any other religious wacko, and they're praising God. But when you report it accurately, it's a God by the name of Allah, which is the Islamic God, which they don't want any of this associated, of course, with Islam. But it becomes the only God named Allah is the Islamic God, and the Islamic God is having his stooges say that he's greater. Greater than whom? You know, if you're in a rational and informed world, Islam is exposed and condemned by the confession. Allahu Akbar is what all 19 of the suicide bombers of 9/11 shouted into the voice recorders. It was a confession. It answers who did it. It explains why they did it. It even tells you how to go about stopping them if the world was informed and rational. But since liars in the media are responsible for providing information, and the information they're providing is rubbish, makes it very difficult for most people to understand what's happening. The black flags, of course, are jihadist flags. In the Hadith, there's a series of flags, red, white, and black, that are used by Muhammad's militants to signal their advances and attacks on civilian communities, to plunder them in order to rob them, to rape the women, to enslave the children, to kill the men. The flags are part and parcel of Islam. And so in front of those black flags, they shouted, "Allah is great," as each man was shot. So you tell me, what would cause someone to say that their God is greater, that Allah is greater, that Allah is greatest, and that the proof that Allah is greater is their willingness and ability to murder a man in the back of the head, to blow out his brains? When you are shouting attributes to your God, kudos to your God while you're killing people, as were the 9/11 suicide bombers who killed 3,000 people, shouting, "Allah is greater." When you're doing that, what does it say? Does it say that your view of God is so warped that you think that murder is what he wants? Imagine that. Imagine singing God's praises while committing the acts of mass murder, which is precisely what was being done here. The executioner returned to some victims, firing more bullets into them, just making sure they were dead. No, he wasn't making sure they were dead. He was gloating. That's what Islam does. Gloats. He was enjoying it. He was smiling. The video is the second in 2 days to show executions by fighters who say they are from, and this idiot from Reuters says they're from Al-Qaeda-linked groups. No, they're not. There's no linkage between the Nusra Front and Al-Qaeda, just as there was no linkage between Hezb-e-Islami and the Taliban. The linkage, the connection, is between Islamic terrorists and their religion, Islam. Between murder and the Islamic God, Allah. It is all about Allah, who was modeled after Satan's desire to be worshipped as God. That's what this is all about. And just as Yahweh revels in life and that he was the author of life, Satan, therefore Allah, revels in death. Islam's signature. A video posted online on Wednesday from the northern province of Raqqa, which is controlled by the same Islamist rebels, showed three blindfolded men sitting on the curb in a central roundabout before being shot in the back of the head with a pistol. So there are two executions. By the way, that's a war crime to execute a soldier like this. But what does Islam care? I mean, its rules are wholly incompatible with anything that would be considered civil. Videos of executions and torture have become increasingly common in Syria, where more than 94,000 people have been killed in a conflict that is now in its third year, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, a pro-opposition monitoring group. Turning to a slightly different place in the world, Reuters is reporting that after a crackdown pushed them out of Nigeria's northern cities, the Islamist militant group Boko Haram has regrouped. They have rearmed, and they are staging a bold comeback that has already allowed them to seize control over vast parts of the northeast of that country. Nigeria is in the midst of a civil war. Using porous boulders in Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, in the desolate scrub land around Lake Chad, they are smuggling bigger weapons. Where do you think they're smuggling from? Do you think it's the weapons that the United States, through Qatar, provided to the Libyan rebels who murdered our ambassador? Do you think it's the weapons that we supply to Egypt to empower the Muslim Brotherhood? Do you think that they're also getting their hands on the weapons that Americans supplied to Al-Qaeda and the Taliban so that they could war against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan? Are they getting the weapons that America supplied to the Shias who we empowered in Iraq? Well, they're smuggling They don't manufacture weapons, mind you. They're smart enough for that. But they're good at smuggling, stealing, smuggling. That was one of the things that Muhammad did extraordinarily well. His religion is particularly good at stealing. As a matter of fact, the eighth surah of the Quran is about stealing, and it says stealing is lawful and good. These raids are not only about smuggling, they're also about killing and kidnapping. Two of the things that Muhammad used to build his religion on. He kidnapped for ransom countless individuals, all documented in the Quran and Hadith, killing thousands of people. In an escalation of violence that could further draw Nigeria's neighbors into its counterinsurgency, as they say, counterinsurgency. And it's a civil war. Muslims not wanting to tolerate anything other than Allah and Sharia law. The Islamists now control at least 10 of 27 local councils in the Borno state, Nigeria's most remote northeastern region at the edge of the Sahara Desert, which means that they are, in fact, receiving their weapons from places like Libya, which means they're American weapons. Nigeria's border on the Sahara has made it the place where this article says Africa's most medieval Islamic empires once ruled. And they're rising again. What this article says is there's no way to put this genie back in the bottle.
The time.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were talking about the issues with Boko Haram and Nigeria and how that country is being literally blown apart in the at the dividing line. And the dividing line is not geographic, even though the north is principally Islamic and the south is principally Christian. It is being blown apart, not even by the racial divide between Muslims and Christians. It would be inappropriate here to say that this is a civil war between Muslims and Christians, because overwhelmingly the victims are Christians and the perpetrators are Muslims. And so it's very much like calling the wars fought in against Israel the Arab-Israeli wars. Terrorism the same way. The Israelis are the victims, and they are mostly in defense mode. And the Muslims are the perpetrators. Well, here is the same thing in Nigeria. The Christians are the victims. The Muslims are the perpetrators. Boko Haram's struggle for an Islamic state, and by the way, they have Sharia law imposed already in the north, but they want everything. You cannot appease a Muslim by saying to them, for example, if the world were to say, okay, Israel, we don't care about your security. We don't care that Muslims destroy you. We're going to give all of Israel to the Muslims. They would not be content. It would not bring peace. All they would do is turn their attention to the next territory to conquer. Well, such is the case with Boko Haram. This reads, Boko Haram's struggle for an Islamic state has killed thousands since 2009 as the main threat to Africa's top oil producer, although its fighters have so far not struck anywhere near the southern oil fields. When Borno's governor, Kissim Shettima, briefed visiting senators and military advisors in a confidential security meeting just last week, he said something that stunned them. Boko Haram are on the verge of seizing control of the entire state. That's how bad it is. Another item in the news that I'm sure just slips quietly under the ruby-red slippers of the popes, but I shared with you that the reason that Pope Francis became pope is because of the fact that Cardinal Ratzinger knew that as a result of the disclosures that were mandated by the court in Los Angeles with the archdiocese proving that it was Ratzinger himself that was responsible for allowing pedophile priests to continue to abuse children. The combination of that and the internal document which shows that there are homosexuals in Rome that are blackmailing the Vatican, that he would have to move into the Vatican, and that's true. But this now is Pope Francis's first official move as Pope. Kind of interesting. He says that Pope Francis has proclaimed the first saints of his pontificate in a ceremony at the Vatican, a list which includes 800 victims of an atrocity carried out by the Ottoman soldiers in 1480. So the Ottoman soldiers, those would be Muslims. And we're dealing with 1480, and there are 800 victims. They were all beheaded. So this activity that we're witnessing, making a connection here, they witnessing in Syria, where there's a number of mass executions, people shot in the back of the head, and men bowing down before the Ottoman regime and having their heads cut off. Exactly the same thing, is it not? And there being those who had their heads cut off were cut off because they were apostates to Islam. Well, there were 800 in the Ottoman Empire, victims in 1480. They were beheaded in the southern Italian town of Otranto after refusing to convert to Islam. And so here in that case, the Ottoman Turks, the Muslims, weren't killing those who refused to convert to Islam in Turkey. They weren't trying to kill those who refused to convert in Judea and Israel, not in Egypt. No, they were in Italy. You see, the story of Islam is the same. You give them an inch, they'll take a mile. They were continuing to savage the world on behalf of their savage religion. They were in Italy, and they cut off 800 people's heads. Why? Because they wouldn't convert to Islam. The choice is convert to Islam or your life. Their names are unknown apart from one man, Antonio Primaldo. Within 2 months of taking office, Pope Francis has proclaimed more saints than any of his predecessors. Islam has been bad for a very, very long time. It has not changed. It is what it has always been. It is so savage that it needs to be exposed and condemned. I am Yada. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. I want to personally invite you to a wonderful 2-hour free seminar.